The internet has changed everything. And in the sex industry, it's changed porn more than anything. This is the 8th in KBOO's 10-episode series on the business of sex in Portland. In this episode, we tackle the subject of porn and the sex toy business. How do these special areas fit in the business of sex in our city?
Porn is about appearance, fundamentally. Here's economist Dr. Catherine Hakim speaking about how appearance and image seem to have become more important because of the internet.
In this book, Erotic Capital, I point out that the expansion of digital photography across the world, really, and the use of smartphones and the internet, which allows people to post photos of themselves, has changed relationships for non-commercial people, relationships as well as commercial relationships. Photos have become endlessly important. The most important thing that you show in your profile for any kind of dating website, as well as a website offering sexual services, is the photo or a series of photos. And because of that, physical attractiveness has become hugely, hugely important. And women who previously would have been very attractive if you met them in person may not necessarily be very photogenic and present very well on the internet, but it's what you see on the internet, and Tinder and Grindr for gays, these are the things that people first focus on.
By the way, Dr. Hakim notes that the line between sex and dating sites is blurring.
This is a quote. Sexual markets are no longer clearly differentiated and separate from marriage markets, end quote. What does that mean?
Well, that's, again, a result of the internet and the creation of all these websites, which are either dating websites for non-commercial relationships or for commercial relationships. They all look the same. The websites look the same. The way they proceed and the way they invite people to choose potential partners on the basis of their looks or a very brief profile is the same in most cases. So the type of picture may be slightly different for the sex trade versus a dating website, but actually the whole social process is so similar. And in some cases, it's very well known that on dating websites you get some women who may be offering relationships or sexual liaisons with some compensation expected. That they move between, or they're registered on lots of different websites. There's no clear demarcation. In the past, if you went to a dance, you knew very well what class of people went to that dance because of the location and the price of entry and all the rest of it. On the internet, there are no such social signifiers.
Porn is an industry. Like what? Food? Here's Dr. Sheila Tarrant, economist at UCLA, making that case.
People tend to forget that pornography is an industry. People often tend to think it's a private activity only between themselves and their laptop or their phone, when in fact there is an entire industry, a global industry, around pornography. So relatively little attention is paid to the business end of it. At the same time, even when people are researching and paying attention to the business end in terms of revenue, traffic, hosting sites, and all those sorts of things, it is really hard to get at the size and the scope and the details of the industry for a number of reasons. For one thing, there is illegal trafficking, and that's underground. There are individuals hosting from their homes or doing cam work that doesn't fall under the umbrella of a corporate entity or anything like that. And then there are other businesses that have umbrella businesses, and so it's hard to trace. It's hard to know exactly who's doing what.
You've probably never heard of a company called MindGeek, have you? But porn is a multinational business in which there are monopolies. Dr. Tarrant, again.
MindGeek is one of the biggest companies that hosts a number of tube sites, and they're really one of the biggest. And what that means is that there's basically a monopoly happening. And I think even though we have antitrust laws and things like that in the U.S., we've gotten so accustomed to monopoly, corporate ownership of all sorts of things that we don't even really notice anymore.
Are the changes that we're seeing, are they positive from a woman's point of view? Do you think the internet, the getting people off the street, making this an electronic kind of communication, is this somehow better from a woman's point of view?
Well, I can't speak for all women, but that's a really good question. I would say for sure, when pornography was only in certain neighborhoods or truck stop adjacent stores on the highway or only in certain theaters, in certain neighborhoods, that was not space that women could access safely. And what that meant was that realm was not available to women to explore, even on principle. So in that sense, having access with privacy, I think, is a positive thing. At the same time, I would not suggest that internet pornography is full stop positive. It's a mixed bag.
Wait, there's racism in the porn industry? Surprise, surprise.
Racism can come up in porn in terms of the content and how women of color and men of color and whiteness is portrayed and represented. But there's something else going on within porn as well that really we wouldn't stand for in any other aspect of our economic society. So it is very hard to imagine a workplace where employees would be allowed to say who they would and would not work with. But within pornography, it gets complicated because it is really important, on the one hand, that adult performers have the right to say, I will work with this person or that person is on my what's called a no list. At the same time, people who work within the industry may say that they refuse to work with people from various races or ethnicities. I can't imagine that being allowed to happen in any other workplace. The other aspect of the industry that is incredibly racist is the pay differential, where women of color are paid less, where scenes involving women or men with color are paid differently than white-on-white scenes.
Can you see the U.S. Supreme Court taking up issues of racism and monopoly in the porn industry? Fortunately, we have at least one justice with experience in the industry who could write the majority opinion in defense of the corporate rights of MindGeek.
Here in Portland, we love porn film. Over the first two weekends in November, you might have visited Portland's 13th annual Amateur Porn Film Festival. It must have been held at some dingy theater in a sketchy part of town, right? No. It took place at that bastion of respectable arts, Revolution Hall. So let's get back to Portland and let's talk porn films. Here's porn film director Lily Campbell, who's making porn a career. Lily, do you think porn has any bad effects on individuals or on society as a whole?
For one thing, I feel like that there's a lot of misconceptions around that whole idea. There's been a proven correlation between the increase of the availability of pornography in America and the decrease of sexual and domestic violence. It's quite stark, and that's been established. I do see an upside. You know what I do see as a downside, though, that I like to combat, and what I really try to combat with my work is misconceptions of female pleasure. So much porn that's out there is so fakey. There's a lot of young adults, especially young men, who, because of our lack of sexual education, can look at porn and oftentimes see a sea of stuff that's not actually going to get women off if they emulate it.
So many changes in the industry. Will virtual reality become the next frontier?
In what I shoot, it feels like you're right there with the person. And it's really consent-based, where there's a lot of eye contact with the camera for a lot of what I do for the virtual reality stuff. You can be in this world and just pop up and be right there with them, and it can be this really intimate, immersive experience that can be more candid, and feel like you're right there. So what I shoot primarily is 3D VR in 180. I also shoot 360 content, which is being able to look all around, you know, yourself, like exorcist styles, look up, look down, look back, and, you know, everywhere. I shoot really up close and personal with that. And oftentimes when I'm shooting the VR content, I am so committed to having it feel really intimate and connected that I coach the model on, you know, where they can be in regards to the technology that's around them for shooting this VR content. And then I leave the room because I want them to connect with the camera in an intimate way.
Okay, we have a spelling test for you today. Phthalate. We'll use it in a sentence, just to help you think it through. And here it is. Amory Jane of Shebop recommends that you purchase sex toys free of phthalates. So you had your chance. Here's the correct spelling. Phthalate. P-H-T-H-A-L-A-T-E. Phthalate. Got it? And here's Amory Jane herself.
But one thing that separates Shebop from, you know, an average sex toy boutique is the fact that the materials are all body safe. So phthalate free, which means they're going to be non-toxic to the body.
Free of what?
Phthalates or phthalate. It basically is something that happens when plastic is softened so that it feels more squishy. It can release toxins into the system. It's not FDA approved. In Europe, phthalates are banned. In the United States, they're banned in children's toys, but adult toys are unregulated, so people can pretty much put anything in there. They test lubricants, but they do not test sex toys. It's a pretty unregulated industry, and so it's kind of up to the consumers to be educated and up to the shops to choose what to sell. So as the education coordinator, I book workshops at Shebop for after hours. Those are usually held on Wednesday, Thursdays, or Sunday nights. And I teach about half of them, and then we also have other instructors, either who are local or who come through town. So I book those, but then I also go out into the community along with one of my colleagues, Gretchen, and we go into college classrooms and teach. I teach at a lot of conferences and expos. So I have a podcast. And I have a variety show that's a sex-positive variety show that includes components of education. So I try to get out there in as many different ways as possible.
In case you want to take a course at Shebop, the winter schedule this year includes Fellatio 2.0, an oral sex upgrade, and Introduction to Rope Bondage. That's just for starters. Early on, we asked the question, can porn be ethical, pro-feminist? And now we know what Dr. Hakim and Dr. De La Justa and Lily Campbell and Amory Jane think about that. But what do you think?
We'd like your feedback. At the end of this series, we'll do a full episode in which you get to speak your mind on this subject. If you have a comment or question about the series or about the sex trade, we'd like to hear it. Call the KBOO Newsroom at 503-231-8032. Extension 202, and we'll hear you out and put you on the air.
The next episode is our penultimate, second to last, and we're going to strip the subject down to its bare essentials and talk about stripping the heart and soul of the business of sex in Portland. So join us for that next episode. I'm Tom.
And I'm Natalie.
And that's it for episode 8 of Sex for Sale.